Well, we've come to that point in the evening where we bring out our keynote speaker for tonight. Looks like we've got a pretty full house, which usually means that either Dick or Bert Rutan are in the audience, and we have Bert with us tonight. I think it was back in the 90s when he said at a forum, he said, "Someday I'm going to fly my spaceship to Oshkosh." And of course, he did that a couple of years ago, but I'm sure a lot of people, when they heard him say that, kind of chuckled to themselves. But for us true believers, we knew that someday he would, and he did. And now he's bringing the next generation to see us. How many saw it come in yesterday? White Knight 2, yeah. And watched it fly today. I mean, that was just, it was very impressive. I was lucky enough to be at the far end of the east-west runway when it took off, and it was a sight to behold, and luckily to be in the right place at the right time. But anyway, we want to hear more about this fantastic airplane and what's ahead. So we'd like to have you join me in welcoming Bert Rutan and Will Whitehorn to talk more about White Knight 2, the Virgin Mothership Eve. Gentlemen.
Okay, yeah, Richard Branson is joining us also. I don't know that, well, excuse me. No, Richard had to leave. This morning's talk, we talked about the designer of the White Knight 2. Bob Morgan is here with us, and he is the president. And I want to take this opportunity to say something from the bottom of my heart. Is this project was tougher than we thought it would be. We didn't build a mock-up of this airplane. We just looked at it on the computer screen, and then as we built the airplane, we were all shocked at how big it was.
We were quite angry.
Well, you wanted to the experience of floating about a big enough cabin, right? But at any rate, the thing I want to point out is we've been building airplanes there in Mojave since 1974. This airplane represents an enormous amount of not just the kind of smarts that come out of young engineers, designers' minds. And those folks are a lot smarter than I was at that age. Every one of them are. But it's also an enormous amount of sweat. There were times building this airplane and putting it together where the engineers and the shop people worked all night to make some kind of schedule. They worked all night. And there's not real wonderful cultural places to get dinner in Mojave. I don't know if you've been there or not. But anyway, I want to take the opportunity to say to Bob, and of course my engineering and shop team, key folks are here, you can see them dressed like we are, a thank you for an enormous job, not just well done, but for an enormous job that put in an effort to me. As many airplanes as I've built, this effort was unbelievable. And I applaud you for that, Bob. As I mentioned this morning, when I laid out the concept, long before we had a contract, when I laid out the concept of what White Knight 2 would look like, it was really just a rubber scaled up White Knight 1. And Bob sorted out that I had it all wrong. That I was missing an enormous opportunity to let people ride in the launch airplane and to see their friend who's about to go to space right there, instead of being under him where you can't see the spaceship's initial firing and launch. You don't see it until it passes way out in front. And the opportunity to watch a spaceship and wave at your wife because she's going to go to space in about 3 or 4 minutes.
And not on a one-way ticket, okay. Obviously.
One way? It's just, well, you know, are you guys...
That's the thing you were
we sell more tickets if it's... No, yeah. But anyway, to look at them right there and to say, honey, have a nice flight, and then to watch this enormous thing drop off and immediately fire that rocket and know that she now is 3.5 to 4 G's back, and momentarily added to that is a 3 G turn up. And then before you know it, that plume turns into a speck, and then you can't see it anymore. And that happens in seconds, not minutes. That is going to be the most thrilling way to watch a manned spacecraft flight ever, by leaps and bounds, up close in comfort. And Bob showed me how important that would be to have the White Knight people in a boom, not up there on the top, and also how much safer it would be to have the White Knight at the same level so you can climb in and out of it and not have the safety issues of being way up on top. But anyway, these guys did a phenomenal job in going from my sketch to something that looks completely different and something that flies beautifully. It is meeting its weight targets, it is meeting its performance targets, and they're having a hell of a lot of fun. And be able to get it here to Oshkosh and show it to you on its 16th flight is for us a big accomplishment. But anyway, thanks again to our team.
Okay, so welcome Oshkosh.
Now go ahead and say some.
Thank you, Bert.
Let's sit down.
I'd just like to say the hundreds of us at Scale that put the airplane together and have toiled on this airplane, struggling to meet the schedules and fulfill the dream. A lot of us were thinking, we had a phrase that what would Bert do? And that's usually our inspiration when we got stuck in a bind. And we look and say, what would Bert do? And usually we found something that was simpler and more elegant and just cut out the BS and went straight for the jugular, you know. And Bert's an inspiration to all of us at Scaled. He provides the leadership. He's not just a brilliant designer, but he's an amazing leader that has provided inspiration for a lot of us at Scaled to push ourselves and try and do more. And he's set a goal to put people in space, and we're all trying to fulfill that dream. And thank you.
Well, can I just say one word before Bert speaks again?
Don't think that I had oversight on this program, but during the most critical times of the development of this airplane, I was either very sick or in hospital or recovering from heart surgery. So you didn't need to even worry about what would Bert do. You knew he was out of the picture for a while. And that may be one of the reasons these guys did such good work.
Well, that was the one word I was about to say. When I began working on this project, Bert was, he was a very well man at the time. And he gave Sir Richard a vision of what we could do with Spaceship One to turn it into Spaceship Two. And we at Virgin were a little bit skeptical. And the first thing we thought was, can we make Spaceship One become a vehicle by itself? Can we just create another version of that? And actually, it was Scaled and Virgin talking together that led to Spaceship Two. We ended up realizing that we shouldn't recreate Spaceship One for the first stage of what we're going to do. We should go straight to the main event. And the main event is an amazing vehicle. Not only is White Knight 2 an amazing vehicle, the one you've seen today, but also Spaceship 2 is an amazing vehicle. They're both capable of doing much more than just carrying people who want to see the planet Earth into space. They're vehicles that are capable of doing many other things. And that is the exciting thing about this project. To be in a situation where you are able to actually say, yes, we can offer science in space to people. We can offer human-in-the-loop science in space to people. We can also create a vehicle which can carry the first stage to launch of an unmanned satellite into space is important, and it matters to all of us. And I'd like to take my hats off to both Bert Rutan and Bob Morgan for the work that they've done, and all the rest of the team at Scale, and all the rest of the team at Virgin. I'd like to, it's a boring thing to do, but we have a fantastic team at Virgin Galactic. They've done an amazing job over the last 4 years. We've worked through a major recession. We have carried on funding a project. We've found a new investor. We've brought this project forward. And that is very important, not only for us, but also for the future of humanity in space. and that matters. And the reasons why that matters we'll talk about over the next 45 minutes. But what I'd like to do first is pass over to Bert, who's going to say a few words and probably show maybe a couple of pictures about the Spaceship Two program.
Yeah, I'd love to do that because there's some anecdotes of the fun that we had doing the program. And but first, I think it's important to ask Bob to do one more thing. When we're out on the flight line here and people come up to you, they ask you all kinds of questions. And at least every other question is something to do with the design features of the airplane. Why is this like this? Is this boosted controls? And you know, these are all airplane folks, so they ask different questions than if we go to another convention. Okay?
Now, God, you're all airplane folks. That's what I say.
Here's the thing. Bob was unable to be at our forum this morning, so I didn't cover those sort of things in detail because he's the guy that knows all of it in detail. So what I'd like to ask you to do, Bob, is, you know, you've been calibrated on what kind of things people ask. You also have a lot of things about the airplane that probably people don't know that would be interesting to find out. We have a lot of time because the slideshow is relatively short. Why don't you spend a few moments and tell this audience about the basic features of your design and about why things were done this way and you know, what kind of systems it has and you know, tell them why it looks like it does and you know, the whole story, how it supports the mission of space tourism too.
Okay, thanks, Bert. White Knight 2 was an evolution from White Knight 1. White Knight 1 was purpose-built as a carrier aircraft of the Spaceship 1. And Bert's initial layout was very similar. And when we started looking at it, I had previously worked on the Virgin Global Flyer, which was the around-the-world airplane that Steve Fawcett flew around the world three times. A remarkable accomplishment. That was a twin boom. That was a twin boom aircraft as well, with a center pod cabin. And at the time, I was talking to the project engineer John Carco, and I said, "Wouldn't it be cool if we could move that cabin over to the front of one of the booms and just eliminate a little bit more of interference drag, and you know, clean it up a little?" And we were far along, but you know, the idea was planted, and then we were also looking for any way we could save weight. Another legacy that we adopted was the, because of the endurance of the Global Flyer with the steel cables and the all-carbon structure, the carbon doesn't shrink with cold temperatures at altitude, and it spent 3.5 days circling the Earth, and it cold-soaked, and the carbon cables shrink as soon as they get to altitude. And so you would have to rig the airplane with very loose cables because otherwise they got too tight and the friction got too high to work the controls. And we were looking at the sailing industry and they use, you know, Kevlar rigging and things like that. And we said, well, we're a composites company. Why aren't we investigating carbon rope as a control system? And so we employed that in the airplane. So the airplane uses carbon control cables. Another feature is a selfish one of my own is watching the XPRIZE flights. I was out there in the desert with many other enthusiasts, space enthusiasts, and I'm watching a tiny speck of a contrail or looking through a telephoto lens, and I'm thinking, boy, the place to be watching this is at 50,000 feet, watching that rocket drop and feeling the, you know, the impulse of the rocket thrusting as it pulls away from the mothership. So that was the genesis of getting another cabin in the airplane. It would increase the odds that maybe I could watch a launch from somewhere up close. And of course, there's practical aspects. You know, you can carry more revenue passengers. It can be part of the indoctrination during the training for the astronauts. They can go up there and watch a mission the day before. Maybe they launch. I don't know. You know, Virgin's going to develop those ideas. For alternative launch missions, we have other aircraft that do a lot of high flying, carrying experimental payloads that NASA and other scientists use for doing environmental research, things like that. And if you could be in the aircraft instead of telemetrying the data, you could be in the other cabin. You can have the crew on one side, and then you can have mission specialists on the other side with racks of computers monitoring their data real time instead of processing it after the fact. So that was part of the genesis there. Another inspiration was the White Knight 1 had the cabin stacked above the spaceship, and when we scaled this airplane up, that cabin was going to be something like over 30 feet in the air with the W spar, and that would make for very difficult egress and just, you know, the perspective from up there. So we thought, and another inspiration, of course, is we tried to adopt a lot of the philosophies that were really some of the, you know, really simple ideas, but some of the genius that Bert came up with that made the XPRIZE really work was trying to put common systems in the mothership that you put in the spaceship. So, for instance, on the XPRIZE, as well as this program, the cabins are identical. So we've already pressure tested the spaceship cabin. We've the windows are the same, the sight view out the window that the crew is going to see. And so another inspiration is getting that cabin down at the same waterline is good for the landing approach. When they come in and they practice the landings, we have the spoil flaps we can deploy, and we can basically mimic the glide path of the spaceship on approach. So we'll be able to train astronaut crew members to do that approach. So having them at the same water line in the same cabin, sitting in the same crew station, the avionics system that Scale developed is remarkable. It's all scratch design, multifunction displays, the all in-house software, even the hardware was done. And the design there provides flight path predictors and that'll be useful for the spaceship glide approach to landing. And so we have the same software modeled in the White Knight 2. So we'll be able to work out all those bugs because we're basically leading the spaceship by approximately a year. So we'll have a lot of experience before we take into flight test the spaceship. There's a lot more opportunities to fix problems on the White Knight. It's a lot more benign airplane. The spaceship, you know, the first time you light the rocket, you're going supersonic. So it's not the time to sit and have a discussion with your ground station engineers to discuss a problem. So we're going to try and work out as many of those bugs on the mothership. And that was a philosophy we took from the XPRIZE. So we've got a lot of common systems. Actuators that are used on one airplane are used on the other. Common cabins. Some of the other questions I've had, I think I addressed the twin boom question. Did we build the landing gear in-house? The answer is yes. A lot of people commented on how elegant it looked. We did most of that work in-house. Skilled, I think I'm very proud of the fact that we do most of the development and manufacturing, with the exception of some subcontracting of very large things that are out of the capacity of, let's say, our machine shop, we do it all in-house. Everybody that works in the plant comes out and helps build the airplane. When we're doing a blind close out of the wing, we typically come in on a Saturday morning at 5 a.m. and the vice president, the president of the company are there. Everybody's there. We bring donuts. And it's kind of like a barn raising, and it's like a community. It's a really cool experience, and Scale's a cool place to work. And the being able to put an airplane like that together is, you know, I'm really proud of everyone that worked on it, and feel a lot of pride that we're doing something. You know, you get caught up in the minutia of working on this project. I've been working on it for years, working a lot of overtime, and coming here. Going to the rollout ceremonies that Virgin's done is really inspirational because people remind you of what you're really doing. You know, we're building a part of history.
So meanwhile, as all this was going on, Virgin wanted a spaceship system. And what we wanted was something that our boss told us he wanted. And the thing he wanted more than anything else was something that would do everything. Now, as you all know in life, nothing can do everything. But what the White Knight is something that can do a lot of things that we want to do. And the most exciting thing about White Knight 2 and about Spaceship 2 is that they are multi-purpose. Space tourism is really important. It's important to take people to the idea that they can believe they can go to space. But more important than that, apart from this phone call that's coming in, which I'm going to ignore entirely, the most important thing is that you can take people to a place called space. You can also take scientists to a place called space. At the moment, scientists find it very hard to get to space. They get to space by organizing a government rocket to take something to the International Space Station. They get to space by paying money to send a sounding rocket to space with a little experiment on board. They can't go with their experiment for a few minutes of microgravity, which they might need. And actually, in the future, medicine and so many other things are going to rely on that for their future. But the fantastic thing also about the White Knight 2 and Spaceship 2 system is that White Knight 2 is a vehicle, and thanks actually largely to Bert's vision, and I'd say Richard's vision and Bob's vision together, is that White Knight 2 is also a vehicle capable of taking another vehicle to space. Not just our spaceship. Our spaceship's important for our customers. It's important also for space scientists in the future. But we have a vehicle here that can begin to prove the process of taking rocketry to space in a different way. And the different way is this. We can put under the White Knight 2 a rocket that could take it unmanned satellite structure to space and launch it to a low Earth orbit satellite position, 700 kilometers or 800 kilometers above the Earth, and do things we can't do at the moment. Now, the reason we can't do the things we can't do at the moment in space is nothing to do with our technology. We know how to, for example, bring solar power back to the planet Earth. We know how to do server farms in space for places that have not got the communications we have in the United States or Great Britain. We know how to do all these things, but we don't have a vehicle at the moment that can do it cheaply enough to make it worthwhile. And what White Knight 2 is so important for is the ability to take us with new technologies into space in a way that is cheap enough to make them work effectively. And that's very, very important. And what's equally important to that is the fact that we know, as a result of what we've done already, we could build a White Knight 3 in the future. We could take bigger things to space. And space matters so much for all of our futures that actually this is a project not just about our commerciality of getting our space tourists up there, not just about us getting space scientists up there, or even small satellites that we were talking about today earlier on. This is a project that leads to the future of the way to access space.
You know, thank you, Will. The one thing that I've learned in the 38 years I've been coming to Oshkosh is that we have a crowd out here that's unique to any crowd in the world, and that you guys know a hell of a lot about airplanes. And you can walk around that airplane and figure out a whole bunch of things that are obvious to you. And so when we have technical discussions on it at Oshkosh, I like to focus on the things that you may not have figured out. And there are some things that are different about this airplane that that you haven't figured out. For example, if you look at it, you see what looks like a heavy lift cargo airplane with a very high aspect ratio wing with very low span loading. Well, I want to tell you that for the mission that we do, and particularly if we fly a mission where we fly a payload that's heavier than Spaceship Two, and we do have designed some margins in, but if we put a fully loaded, fully fueled Spaceship Two and hook it onto the middle of this airplane, and we take off to go and do a space launch with 8 or 11 people, whoever has bought the tickets. These guys won't sell center seats now, so they're only going to fly 8. But if we do, think of that airplane as being half of its weight, essentially half of its weight, is hung on those three hooks right in the middle. Now, when you've got a very long wing and you've got an airplane with half of its weight right in one place, right in the middle, it puts enormous stresses on a wing. So building the wing strong enough for that, and we used a new method to build these wing spars. We focused on making sure that we had the most reliable structure that we could, because you know that's you really well you know, to do that and to handle the maneuvering and the gust loads that you might have going up, you have to have a very strong, very stiff wing. But what if you take that same airplane and you go fly it without half of its weight in the middle? Now the airplane looks very much different to the airplane designers. Now the White Knight 2 is a span loader. It has essentially no weight in the middle. It has a large percentage of its weight in these booms. It has more mass outboard with engines and fuel. And the wing has very little bending stress when you take the spaceship off. Now, what that means is without building the wing a pound heavier, we have a 6 or 7G airplane. Now, we don't have a 6 or 7G airplane if the pylons that hold the engines are only 2.8 or 3 Gs. The engines will fall off. So, had a little meeting with Bob, and I says, you know, we ought to make the pylons stronger so they're not the weak point. So we have a few more pounds of weight in the pylons. We also have some attention to some of the fuel system issues and some other things. That airplane is a limit load factor of, design limit load factor of, is it 6.5 or 7G, something like that. You don't see a big cargo airplane that's a 7G airplane, do you? You also are aware, and you've seen several airplanes show up at Oshkosh that have a thrust to weight ratio of 1. They're always fighters with real short wings. Well, if we fly this airplane with a show weight of fuel and without a spaceship 1, we have a thrust to weight ratio of, yeah, it's 0.9 something, it's almost 1. Wow, that'd be a great aerobatic airplane. I will tell you that we're very early in this test program, and we're flying this very gingerly now as we build up the envelope. But likely, if we're invited back to do an air show next year, you may see some 6 feet turns, and you may see some vertical climbs, because when you see an airplane demonstrated at Oshkosh, you almost always see it demonstrated for part of the maneuvers at full throttle. The whole show today was about half throttle at the most. The pilots only used about half throttle for the show. Bunch of pussies, right?
I was singly unimpressed, obviously.
But I believe, though, after we've opened up the envelope, that next year's air show will be the same airplane with the same thrust to weight ratio and the same limit load factor. But it can do some pretty spectacular things down low. The reason it has to be so overpowered is it needs to carry these loads as heavy as 35,000 feet up as high as you can go to get the advantage of a high launch. Anyway, that's something that to me is interesting because the airplane is unique in that it's high Gs, high thrust to weight, and high aspect ratio all in one, and there's no other airplane like that.
And the interesting thing is that the A340, the A380 was created from the A340. You saw the A380 arrive today. The A380 is the biggest aircraft in commercial terms that's ever been developed. It's the first aircraft that has surpassed the Spruce Goose of 1945. Now, the thing about those two aircraft sitting opposite each other is they are poles apart. But there's bits about them that are similar. One of the bits about them that's similar is composites. The A340 has composites in the wings and bits of the tail and other parts. The White Knight 2 is the world's first entirely composite high-altitude big jet. It's exciting as an aircraft from that point of view. It can go places that no aircraft has gone before. It can do things that no aircraft has done before. And actually, it's not even an aircraft, it's a space launch system. And the fact of the matter is that if we can marry the ability of a company like Airbus to produce the A380, the ability of Scaled to produce the White Knight 2 and create something for the future, then we really do have a future. Because aircraft at the moment that fly commercially are not efficient. They should be much more efficient. And one of the things that Richard loves about this project, and he's said it so many times, is that this is a way forward for aviation. Composites are the way forward, and they're not being embraced enough by any of the major manufacturers. Airbus are doing their best, Boeing are doing their best, they're both having problems, because they're still wedded to aluminium for aircraft, and that's not the right way forward.
That's aluminum for something
you got. Aluminum, sorry. Yeah. Okay. He says tomato and I say tomato. Yeah.
Okay, that was a nice short answer.
Well, there's no question.
The people that are laughing were at the forum this morning when we were beating each other up for our long answers. So I'm going to suggest that we go ahead and show the pictures now, and that'll bring up other items. I don't think Bob was at it this morning, so jump in with me as we see the slides, Bob, and anecdotes is what these guys like, but you've got a lot more about it than I. I'm going to walk over here where I can read the slide. I have only one slide with a bunch of words on it. We, as you know, don't talk about the schedule of a research airplane when it amounts to the things that we're going to do because we're doing research. However, we can talk about the schedule of what we've already done. So to get you guys calibrated, I'm just going to go real quickly through the milestones. 4 years and 10 months ago, a couple of days before the first XPRIZE flight, Sir Richard flew me by, what was the airline that I flew to London on? It was Virgin.
British Virgin.
You know, I got to fly first class on Virgin.
Upper class.
That was cool. Upper class. Oh, God, I screwed up already.
It's fine, but, you know. We
2 days before the first XPRIZE flight, I'm in London with Sir Richard talking to the British press and telling the world that we're really interested, we Virgin are very interested in this, and we want to run the world's first space line, and we are licensing the technology of Spaceship One, and these folks are going to build these things, and we're going to be off and running. We didn't know at that time what we were going to build. We didn't know whether we were going to build a little three-place spaceship one, or whether we were going to build what was the most economical way to do it,